You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble. Hello and welcome to episode 54 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retrod.
We're going to be talking about various bits and pieces of news this week. Announcement, request. Hex Dimension, our sister site, are currently looking for additional content creators. That's either writers or people who want to help put together videos or even podcasts. So if you head to hexdimension.com, there's a page linked to at the bottom saying want to write for us.
Yeah.
If you click on there, there's all the details and a form for you to fill out if you're interested.
And we are fine if you wanted to create, I don't know, some sort of series.
Yeah, if there's a series of videos, or if you want to diarify an experience, you could do that like we've been doing with my Pathfinder campaign of Doom. So, you know,
can you just explain kind of what happened during that campaign, just briefly?
Oh, just in case you haven't seen Hex Dimension, there was an instance last week, during the first proper game session of my Pathfinder campaign, where I may have enabled my PCs the opportunity to launch a wolf at a looter who was already slipping and sliding on a grease trap that had been laid down on a set of inn stairs.
At the top.
So the guy took a wolf to the face.
Yeah.
Cool.
This was after, an evil owl was attempted to be chucked at him, and he managed to dodge out of the way of that somehow. Yeah.
No, he didn't get, the owl wasn't chucked, he just kind of flew over, sure. And he failed the roll to be able to kind of just push the looter just over the edge and tumble down.
Cool.
So, you know, but whether or not I'm actually following Pathfinder's rules verbatim is another question entirely.
But anyway, as long as it's fun.
As long as it's fun. Like writing for the site or creating video content would hopefully be. Want to be upfront, we don't pay.
Well, you have no facility to pay.
We have anymore. No facility to pay. All the hosting and everything, like with this podcast, comes out of my pocket. So, yeah. However, there is the potential for pay in the future if we can ever get the advice needed to set it up, basically.
As a proper business.
Rather than a hobby. But it's quite the hobby site at the moment.
Oh, yes. So, yes. Quite the hobby site.
Anyway, newsy things. There's lots of news. Oh, my God, there's so much news. And there's one particular bit of news that has been giving it a headache to the internet and Twitter since Friday last week. I don't want to go to that first. I want to go to the fact that Kevin Spacey has said that viewers should be allowed to binge on television series.
I agree.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, he was at Edinburgh TV Festival giving a keynote speech, and he was like, you know, let them eat cake. Only not, because that was never actually said. But what he did say was, they want freedom. If they want to binge, as they've been doing on House of Cards, then we should let them binge. Many people have stopped me on the street to say, thanks, you sucked 3 days out of my life. And through this new form of distribution, I think we have demonstrated that we have learned the lesson that the music industry didn't learn. Give people what they want, when they want it, in the form they want it in, at a reasonable price. And they'll more likely pay for it rather than steal it. Well, some will still steal it, but I believe this new model can take a bite out of piracy. Plus, he also said, the water cooler has gone virtual because the discussion is now online, and it's a sophisticated, no spoilers generation. And because of that, we need never be alone with our Breaking Bad habit or our crazy obsession with Dexter and stories of the Great Leveler capable of crossing borders to unite audiences.
Here, here. Makes me want to just stand up and salute.
Yeah.
I'm saluting right now.
I mean, it's just kind of funny how he gave this, you know, keynote at Edinburgh, which included what we just said. And I last week did watch all of House of Cards season 1.
Hmm.
And it was our week. That was rather
kind
awesome.
Of weird timing.
It was kind of weird how I did that. And then it was probably about a day, 2 days after I finished doing that. And he was like, Kino, I say this. And I'm like, huh.
It's like he was speaking directly to you.
It felt a bit like
Give
that.
People what they want, Emily. Give people what they want.
What? set up a distribution service that gives people what they want digitally, whenever they want, wherever they want.
That'll never catch on.
That'll never catch on. Though, in all fairness, while he's obviously been quite praiseworthy in the fact that House of Cards is a Netflix-produced series and hosted series, it kind of ignores the fact that currently services like Netflix and Love Film and Blinkbox and all the other ones available in the United Kingdom on United Kingdom-based IP addresses, they're somewhat limited.
Yeah, to the choice that the Americans get.
Mm.
That's the fine tradition of shafting everyone who isn't America.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, I mean, it could be partly down to broadcasters. Don't forget how our broadcasters stopped Hulu moving over here.
Yes, that's true.
Expanding over here. You know, so if there's perhaps anyone that could be at fault could be broadcasters, but it could also be just the UK-based film distribution companies. They might have some weird deals. Because a lot of it's film-based as well.
Mm. Yeah.
So it'd be kind of like, it's just funny what films aren't available on demand over here.
Yeah, it's really weird sometimes. Because you'll have sequels, but not the originals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's all watch Iron Man 2. No, I want to watch Iron Man 1. Oh, for some weird reason, I can't on Netflix or Love Film.
Yeah. No, but they've got all the shit Highlanders on there.
not the
original, but no, all the shit. Yeah.
Right, so it's just the, let's go to the Everything But The Good One depot.
I tried having a look at their anime section and it looked rather limited to the extreme. But I've got more anime on disc than they have. And I don't ferociously collect anime either. In fact, I've given some of it away recently to my middle brother, and yet I still have more anime than they've got on Netflix.
It does make me wonder, in terms of the amount of things on Netflix that we've experienced, would you say that our DVD collection kind of mirrors that?
I think our
in terms of amounts.
I think our DVD collection could perhaps equal, at least in terms of films, if you discount kids' films, perhaps the number of films available on UK Netflix, which is a scary idea. Okay, discluding the kids and the porn, because there was the porn as well, so we don't...
Was it? Not together.
Yeah, not together, but so we've probably got a selection
of
films.
That Daily Mail.
Selection of films sort of equaling that of Netflix, which is kind of alarming on disc.
Yeah, the selection is rather annoying because recently I was looking at I think it was top 50 sci-fi films that you must see before you die.
Mm.
And I was happy to say I'd seen all but six.
Did you try to find these six on a demand service?
Well, there were two in particular that I'd seen that my other half hasn't.
Oh, okay.
And it was Dark Star and Silent Running.
Ooh.
Silent Running in particular is a classic film. So I went to look for them. Not on Netflix, not on Love Film.
Yeah.
So, rather annoying.
At the same time, but if especially with some of the sci-fi titles, I mean, we talk about on-demand, but some of them, they're actually really hard to track down on physical copy as well. For me, the classic example of that would be Soylent Green, which hasn't, as far as I can
tell, don't spoil it.
Hasn't had a proper release yet anywhere.
Now, to me, those are obvious ones where you think, well, maybe the physical copy in a shop... Making sure so many thousand shops or so many hundred shops have got copies. Maybe that might be a bit of a fool's errand when something is so niche. An early 1970s sort of slightly hippie sci-fi film like Silent Running. I can see how that's going to be niche.
Okay, I'm just checking now, actually, if Soylent Green's had a proper release. Okay, it has had a proper... I'm lying. It's had a proper release since I last checked.
It's probably like Silent Running in that it has had... like a Blu-ray release, but it's been quite limited.
It's had a DVD release, but it's not very easy to get hold of, and it's actually quite expensive. It's $14.99 new. on Blu-ray, that's a US import. So it's not even guaranteed to be the right region.
Just... Although most are, to be fair to them.
Yeah.
Multi-region rules.
But
yeah, it's like on demand is made for stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
I think it is literally a case though that companies haven't signed deals. It's the weird thing of like distribution ownership, because just because a certain studio made the film and perhaps another studio kind of bankrolled that studio making the film, it's whoever's got the distribution rights. And obviously, if nobody bothered to think long term about these rights and left something open for the concept of digital distribution, that could be why these titles aren't available.
But the thing is, though,
I prefer to think they're allergic to money.
But the thing is, though, is that with this, you know, this is just kind of a knock-on effect of what's happened with box sets. You know, it's the fact that we've been able to buy box sets for, you know, since, you know, early 2000s, probably late 90s, actually, you know, to actually, you know, basically binge just there and then, you know, just on the physical copies of it. Well, so this kind of concept of episodic content that you can kind of choose when to watch the next episode has been around for, you know, like a decade, if not longer.
I think actual box sets. Yeah, actual box sets are a relatively new thing. I mean, you could always buy TV series on tape and things like that, but they tend to only release, you know, blocks of say two tapes with two episodes each at a time.
Yeah. I think the stuff that tended to break that was what happened with Fox.
Have a box set and then everyone buys it and go. Oh,
I mean, I remember Buffy used to be like a half a season per box set on VHS.
Three videos in one box.
We used to, you know, buy those as soon as they come out, even though we'd watched them on, you know, TV. But
because you were collecting them and it was to watch at any point. And of course, they wouldn't be cut to hell.
Exactly, and you know, I've been doing that with a load of other series.
Hellmouth.
Okay, I'll get a.
I was just going to say with this, he's got a point with the binging, because how would we all like it if our favourite books were being released episodic, like Dickens and such used to be?
Yeah, I don't... So novels have already gotten over this hump.
They've been and gone. They've decided, it's like, no, we're not going to serialise, we're just going to have the whole thing in one drop. How happy would people be? If, you know, books were released in like a few chapters at a time.
Do you know what, though? This is scary. I can't remember if I imagined this, but I swear I saw some story on some publishers, publishing news site a few weeks ago that suggested that somebody was looking into episodizing novels again. And I was just like, you crazy motherfucker. Don't do that. I mean,
I've got an idea. I'm just going to write into the medical journals and suggest leeches again.
Anyway, next bit of news. The PlayStation 4 at Gamescom last week got a launch
otherwise
announcement.
Otherwise known as the next-gen console.
It got a launch announcement, which for Europe, including the UK, was November 29th. US, November 15th. UK Pro is £349.
Yay!
Still a little steep to me.
Yeah. Not as steep as something else, though.
No, the £80 more for the Xbox One.
Pardon?
£80 more for the Xbox One.
£80?
More.
That's £80 I'm not going to spend along with the rest of the price.
Yeah, it's... the PS4 is still my favourite out of the next-gen consoles. At the moment,
I'm waiting to see what other games that they're gonna get.
That are
exclusives.
As far as I can tell, even though they refined the launch lineups for both systems last week at Gamescom, I still haven't heard of anything that interests me. Meanwhile, Microsoft have managed to continue with the idea that it's mostly guys that want to play the systems. I know there's some girls that like the sport, but FIFA 14 coming as pre-order while stocks last with Xbox One Xbox One pre-orders. It's just kind of like, you have yet to give me a reason to buy this thing on launch.
You know what's kind of worrying is that every single console manufacturer and developer and publisher have been doing this, where they've been targeting at guys or targeting at a very, very narrow band, and then wondering why their profits fall, and then blaming, you know, something else like the market or whatever.
Or secondhand.
And it's like, well, no, you're just not,
Or 9/11 for the early Xbox.
Yeah.
But you're just not getting the picture that, you know, the people that you want to buy, you know, stuff is much wider than what you're actually targeting at.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a straight British man. I really couldn't give a flying shit about FIFA.
And to be fair, even if you did, it would still be cheaper to buy the bloody PS4 with FIFA anyway.
Yeah.
Or, just a small point there. Sorry.
I don't understand why they couldn't do pre-orders with maybe there was like a pool of 3 to 5 different games, and you could pre-order the console with one of the launch games.
That would probably be pressure from publishers, because the publishers will be, you know, chucking cash at developing, or rather, sorry, sideways porting the inevitable PC versions of these games anyway, because both next-generation consoles are PCs.
Yeah.
In disguise.
And in disguise, it's a tower case with a moustache.
It's got a spy mask on.
Yes.
And something that doesn't look like Windows 8 if you're a PS4, but the Xbox One probably does. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Can I just say as well, when I was reading the launch titles that they've got lined up, there was one game that struck out and he slapped me across the face, and I felt like saying, this is not next gen. What the fuck's it doing on there?
Was it
Peggle 2? Peggle fucking 2? Oh,
yeah.
Hasn't that been out for years yet?
It's the real next gen.
What? That's a launch title. Am I supposed to really get excited over that?
That's now. Sony's got the exclusive for Advanced Super 4-Dimensional Air Hockey.
I'm just checking what the launch titles are meant to be for PS4 a minute.
Slightly better than the Xbox Ones, but I think...
So, let's see. Launch...
Not that there isn't stuff for the Xbox One that I would like, but just they would require buying the console, which I don't want to do right now. They've done a very good job at making me not want it.
Okay, so stuff that's actually... Because they're like launch titles, but then a bunch of it's getting a release before it launches, essentially.
Yeah, a lot of them are actually multi-platforms, including the PS3.
Yeah, so that's just the PS4 that I'm looking at the moment. So we've got Assassin's Creed 4, Battlefield 4, Call of Duty Ghosts. I'm trying to look at physical titles because they've got some PSN stuff as well.
And they still haven't listened to us about letting us control the dog in the multiplayer. Activision!
FIFA 14, obviously, Just Dance 2014, Killzone, Shadowfall, Knack, whatever that is. Lego Marvel Super Heroes.
Yay!
There's a Madden, there's the NBAs, and Need for Speed Rivals, Skylanders Swap Force, Watch Dogs. That's that the PS4. Meanwhile, Xbox One, I do believe, has a slightly beefier one, as it were. Launch list. Come on.
It does have one or two nice exclusives, that.
Killer Instinct.
Let's have a look.
Oh, piss off.
Peggle 2.
Okay, so launching for Xbox One. Assassin's Creed 4, obviously.
I can think of two exclusives on the Xbox One that I would like, and neither of them are Peggle.
Dead Rising. Forza Motorsport 5.
Yeah, that's one.
Crimson Dragon, what's that?
It's a Red Dragon thing.
Dead Rising 3, FIFA.
Yeah.
Fighter Within, so Forza.
Oh, no, I really want Rise, he lied.
Lego Marvel Super Heroes.
And since I found out that Titanfall is more or less a multiplayer game, I'm really gagging for that.
Mm-hmm.
Zoo Tycoon.
Yeah. There are pretty much no. There's no next gen games being launched with the next gen consoles. See, I won't be buying on launch because there's not going to be anything I want to play.
Well, I was going to say, every single game I actually want to buy this year is still coming out on the 360 or PS3. So what?
Or in my case, the PC, because from what I've read up on it, my PC is roughly kind of not that far away from the spec of a lot of the games that are going to be releasing with the next gen machines. So,
I've
got... on Steam.
I have been discussing this recently with the better half about how if we actually said sod the next generation, just got a PC, we'd be able to do a lot more with the PC and get it for probably about the same price and run a lot more indie games and stuff and do photo editing and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I've got the feeling that this generation is probably going to be much more of a slow burner. So there's going to be, you know, very little out the next, well, at least for Xbox One and PS4, within the first 12 months, there's going to be very little that are actually system sellers.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I mean, there's the Eurogamer Expo where they will be playable.
Mm. Yay.
But I'm not entirely, I'm prepared to be wowed, but I'm not at all convinced by this. This generation in particular feels like more of an evolution than anything else.
So I mean, I'm actually more excited about the GTA Online, if I'm really honest.
Actually, yes. I'm going to have to get gold for that, you bastards.
We'll talk about that in a bit. But I'm gonna take us on to our next story, of which could be divisive. I don't know what our listeners have thought about this, but Ben Affleck being announced as the actor that's going to play Batman in the upcoming Superman Batman film of 2015.
But how is he going to be able to pull off the suave, sophisticated, good-looking character of Bruce Wayne?
I think if there was ever a chance for Bruce Wayne to really go for having a beard, this is that chance.
Definitely. I'm actually quietly optimistic about it. I'm going to give him his chance. If he bugs it up, then he bugs it up. But
I can't completely diss the idea of Affleck being Batman, because Argo was my favourite film of last year. It has been stated on this podcast.
See, now I can't do my joke.
What was your joke?
My joke was going to be to all those people, all those naysayers that don't like the thought of Affleck as Batman. I'll go fuck yourself.
I'll go on.
Oh man, it's
the thing that I absolutely love about this is that it's dredged up some internet from 2006. Some 2006 internet has just bubbled up to the surface.
Oh, please tell.
With a nice, lovely aroma. You know who they've cast as the Joker.
Yeah.
In Batman. Heath Ledger from A Knight's Tale and 10 Things I Hate About You. He's got the charisma of a lettuce leaf. So someone says here, I won't be able to watch it. I'll keep expecting him to have sex with Batman because he was in Brokeback Mountain. Heath Ledger, a Joker? I don't think so. You're joking, right? That's not right. And now begins the second downfall of the Batman series. This film will probably introduce Robin, then Batgirl. When the only positive things people have to say about Ledger is he is a good gay cowboy, then I think that should explain it all. I hope this is all a joke. Wow. There you go. We all hated Heath Ledger as the Joker, didn't we?
Can I just say that I would love for that to happen more? For people to basically just go back, look at the internet about what people have kind of predicted and want, and just be like, pull it out and be like, ha! Because even though we've got the internet and everything that we write on there is almost permanent, we don't kind of pull each other up on it enough.
No.
I think we're still just basically trash talking, talking about how, we slept with your mum last night or whatever. And it's like,
so you did what?
I slept with Paul Wood's mum last night.
Hello.
Oh, damn it. Who's not on this call?
Meanwhile, despite all this, this has also brought in the fact that there's a lot of snide remarks going, oh, Matt Damon's going to be Robin or something. And it's just like, seriously, what the fuck, people? I don't know if they'd bring Robin in for the film or not. I mean, if they did, it'd be kind of like, will you have to tease off the bit of storyline that happened at the end of Dark Knight Rises.
I'm sorry, but after the Bourne, well, the original Bourne trilogy, that proves that Matt Damon can kick ass in film. So even if he was somehow brought in as Robin, chances are he would still kick ass.
He's too bloody old to be Robin. It's like, okay, maybe he could be a Nightwing, but the idea of the character Robin is they tend to be under the age of 20, as a general rule.
Oh yeah.
So the whole the whole jokes about
the reason he's called the Boy Wonder.
You know, it's just ridiculous. And this, I'm sorry people, this is still a rumor at this point of recording that I have not seen anything that confirms this because the internet has been quoting one bloody source the whole goddamn weekend. It's not confirmed that Bryan Cranston is going to be Lex Luthor. I'm sorry, there's only one website that everyone's quoting. It's a website I'd never heard of before. It's not even Deadline or Variety or someone. It's, what was it, Cosmic Book.
Oh, yes, them.
Yeah. I'm like,
the cosmos far, far away.
Yeah, it's like, who the heck is this? They've heard a rumour that, and now this rumour has somehow transpired onto such lofty websites as the Daily Mail and the Metro. Most telling of all, though,
I wouldn't call the Daily Mail lofty.
Yeah, I haven't seen the story on the Guardian's website.
This bale of straws that you've got in your hands, stop clutching it.
It probably hasn't been on the Guardian's website because that hard drive it was stored on got destroyed.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. I suppose
has Lex Luthor infiltrated the government? Just like destroy all the evidence.
He bought them.
He bought them. He bought MI6, MI5, GCHQ.
Can I just read out some more Heath Ledger stuff?
Oh, okay. Go on.
I've never understood why Ledger is considered a good actor or why women think he's attractive. He's an embarrassment to all Australians. The guy couldn't act his way out of a paper bag. The Joker is deformed and histrionic. Have you ever seen anything remotely like that in a Heath Ledger performance? They've dumped Paul Bettany, Crispin Glover, even Vincent Cassel, for Pete's sake, to get someone as the Joker. The Joker is a character that needs an actor with gravity, not some little twerp who got lucky.
Jeez. I mean, do these people not realise...
That's just brilliant, isn't it?
But do these people not realise the process of casting? They stick in anybody into any role that doesn't actually, you know, perform.
Do you know what? Before bloody Dark Knight Rises... Rises. The Dark Knight. Guess what? Slightly pretty serious film Ledger was in. And actually, when I think about the performance, it was quite a strong performance. This is regardless of what happened to Brokeback Mountain. He was in the film adaptation of The Story of Ned Kelly.
Yes, he was.
You know, which...
So he was, yes. Which was I remember that being touted at the time.
Yeah, which, well, while it may only have, like, an average of about, three stars or something.
He was still good in it, though.
Yeah, it was a bloody good film. And I've read one of the more recent books in the history of the Kelly Gang, that just sort of part historical fact and part fiction, because obviously a lot of what happened nobody knows. But the film was pretty good. Ledger was pretty good at it. And that was before... obviously doing the Joker role.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know what? Ben Affleck, he did Argo last year. The man can act.
He can act, to be fair.
He can also write. Yeah, that was that thing. What was that thing? Was it good? That won lots of awards. That thing.
Good Will Hunting, though.
Yeah. Have people forgotten that?
Just got lucky as a pretty boy.
Second, yeah. I thought you were talking about Mallrats.
He didn't write
Dogma.
That. He didn't write it, but he was
Dogma.
Yeah.
And of course, we had Kevin Smith then kind of going, oh, yeah, I kissed Batman last week after the announcement was made. Because, his huge man crush on The Affleck is scary at times. I'm going to move on to our next bit of, it's more superhero news, but it's our last bit of superhero news for this week. You may have previously heard myself and the pool that sits beside me every week, moaning about the idea that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would probably end up on Sky. You know what? Channel 4 have gone and done something right for once, and they've actually bought the premiere rights for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So it's going to Channel 4 and it's going to be airing in the autumn.
Yay!
Soon after its launch on the ABC network in the US.
Excellent.
There's still time for them to foul it up.
I kind of hope that, you know, because a couple of different programs have done it where the UK showing is, you know, very, very, very close to the US showing to stop people from just basically watching it online after, you know, months of waiting. So I kind of hope that a kind of universal kind of release system would kind of happen with that as well.
A proper intended.
Hopefully so, yeah. That's basically what Sky Atlantic do, don't they? They show it a couple of days after the Americans.
Mm. But it's just that the Sky haven't managed to claw this one. And I hope Channel 4 have managed to get a reasonably lengthy contract for showing the series. Mm. So, because obviously it was good that, well, between Channel 4 and E4, they had Smallville.
Yeah.
Because I would have missed out on Smallville if they hadn't.
But then they lost out on Archer, didn't they? Arrow even, sorry.
Yeah, they lost on Arrow. It's bloody Sky. Bloody Sky.
Okay.
I quite enjoyed that as well.
All those people that are wondering what that was, I think that was Emily mauling the TV guide.
I'm sorry.
Or the Murdoch dynasty.
I just, yeah, but I'm just glad about the fact that I'll be able to watch it. Of course, I'll be watching it when I want to, because I'll probably either be recording it on my Digibox or using 4OD, because it's unlikely that it's going to be airing at a time that's convenient. Sorry, Channel 4, you know, you might want me to watch it whilst it's on air. It's still probably not going to happen.
Technically speaking, if you record something, you know, onto your TV recorder, do those still get kind of counted towards, you know,
I think they do now.
Hmm.
So, you know,
the BBC does for iPlayer, don't they?
Hmm.
Yeah, but there are all kinds of different things that they do.
Yeah.
Does that mean that somebody can actually, you know, set up multiple devices in their house and just play, like, you know, Doctor Who or something like that, just to keep it on the air? Just kind of.
Well, no, because they're probably, because not unless you have to change your IP address. Because they probably, that's one point, they probably caught it on to the fact that it all seems to be coming from the same IP address, so they would discount. No,
I don't know about that. I've managed to keep Doctor Who on air for this long.
Which was impressive considering there was a whole series with Catherine Tate in it.
Oh,
the entire nation switched off apart from Paul.
Good. I have to actually. I watched the Dr. Donna the other day, actually.
I'm sorry.
That was a good episode.
I liked that.
It
always makes me sad, Dr. Donna episode, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it makes me sad because it's got Catherine Tate in it.
See, I don't mind. I don't mind sad episodes as long as they're not the very, very last episodes of an entire series.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's like, say for example, we finished watching Chuck, and that last couple of episodes was just really, really sad.
And it's
like, I really don't feel like going back and, you know, watching them all again. You know, within, you know, a couple of years at least, because I know that there's going to be that very, very bitter ending.
What's annoying though is that obviously this series didn't get a full running for the final season.
Yeah, so it only got 12 episodes rather than the regular 22.
Yeah, so it all felt a bit rushed, like stuff wasn't tied up as well as it could have been. And I was just kind of like, oh. It was a bit of an open ending, so maybe they've just got hopes there'd be a film one day as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or get picked up by Netflix.
But yeah, I
mean, Stranger Things have happened.
I mean, if it's like an ending that is, you know, kind of happy, then, you know, you're more willing to kind of go back and, you know, watch it. But if it's just a sad ending, then it's like, no, I don't want it.
The only thing I want to know about the ending of Chuck, because I haven't seen it, is, and this will give you an idea of how much I remember her name, is Miranda from Mass Effect okay?
I'm not saying anything.
Oh, Miranda.
I'm going to move us on to our final discussion of the evening. Okay, as well as obviously the PlayStation 4's announced sort of release date at Gamescom and all the other Gamescom news that kind of came out, which I thought I didn't find that interesting, but hey, that's just me. There was one piece of news there. Bethesda chose last week as the week to announce that Elder Scrolls Online is going to be subscription-based.
Ta-ta.
And there was this giant uproar from the internet as people were like, oh, I'm not going to consider it if it's not free to play. No. I want it free to play. I want all the crap that free to play brings. Rah! I'm sorry, people. As one third of the people on this podcast who played friggin' Ragnarok 2 online in the past couple of months, I cannot believe. I'm sorry. Free to play MMOs. What the fuck? What the flip? They're awful. My other comparisons to that are Eve, having subscribed to that for a few months, and also having watched people play WoW when it was all subscription based. And
I think I've got an allergy to MMOs. I keep trying them. I keep utterly failing to click with them. With being a massive geeky nerd, I like my Star Wars.
I thought you said nurse.
Massive geeky nurse.
No, I'm only a massive geeky nurse on Wednesday.
Ooh, matron.
But, you know, massive geeky nerd. I am, you know, big Star Trek and Star Wars fan. So I have both MMOs installed on my PC because they're both free to play.
Yeah.
I've utterly failed to get enchanted with either of them.
The
entire idea of Elder Scrolls Online, it's like, yeah, I like the idea of a big Elder Scrolls world. I like the idea of another Elder Scrolls game. I do not like the idea of people running around lamping rats to level up. And it just, no, the problem with MMOs is that you have people in them, and people on the internet are assholes. Okay. So why should I?
I've just loaded up some comments about Elder Scrolls being online. One person said, won't be buying this then. I like how it's justified by him essentially saying, we can get away with charging a monthly fee, so we will. Parsimonious nose bounds. Somebody said the game would have to have some significant advantages over Skyrim, etc., especially since it has been described as a solo experience with the option of finding friends. I mean, would anyone here pay £5 to £15 a month just to play Skyrim with more areas to explore? One person said yes.
I think, to be honest, I probably would, because I am their bitch.
And then somebody said, no, it's hard enough to find the time to play games, let alone devote myself month after month to a single game. To me, paying monthly doesn't seem worthwhile.
But for one game, no.
And then somebody else said, why don't they do what Guild Wars 2 done? All you need to do is pay for the game, and that is it. You have the full game. No restrictions. You have the full world to explore in. For me, it is a good idea for Elder Scrolls to be an MMORPG, but the potential could be killed off for me due to the fact that it requires to be subscription. That was the ultimate reason why I cannot enjoy MMOs like WoW, even though it is partially free to play. Restrictions are in place. That is why there is a drop in subscribers for WoW. Even though I am a person where I play any form of games, I do not want to waste money monthly. If later on it would be boring, I would rather pay for it like how I paid for Guild Wars 2. And somebody replied to this dude. Thing is, they will likely charge more for the box copy than Guild Wars 2 did and still have the sub. If they must have a sub, then how about they let people download the game for free, then pay the monthly fee rather than paying £50 for a box and then a month free.
I agree with that last point, whereas it should be one or the other.
Yes,
if you're going to charge monthly for a game, then let me have the game for free.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, also with the subscription, I wouldn't mind as much if there was content, you know, kind of produced on a very, very regular basis. You know, it's like season passes for, like, you know, games like, say, for example, BioShock Infinite, and, you know, there's several different ones that have had season passes, and it's like, yeah, it's kind of promised content, and it kind of never quite gets delivered on time.
Yeah, it seems.
So yeah, if it's a subscription, make sure that it, you know, it is going to be like, I don't know, say for example, if it's a monthly subscription, make sure that you have got some reasonable content every month. I'm it worth it.
Yeah, I'm still utterly baffled why they think that MMOs are a good idea.
Mm.
They've not really paid much attention, have they? Look at, you know, Star Wars Night, you know, well, Star Wars Old Republic. That was going to be a surefire thing.
Yeah.
It's gone free to play.
Yep.
Conan and, you know, various other games.
Is that still going?
I think last... Warhammer Online. Again, I think that's still going.
Ooh.
But
I'm just going to check if Conan Online. You keep going.
Yeah, you know, all these things. And it's just, why on earth do these companies think, oh, WoW's doing well, let's do an MMO. It's like, pay a little bit of attention, see how well all the other MMOs have done.
Yeah.
It's not a bigger market as you think.
It's not. I mean, the problem for me is, with the MMOs, the reason I play a game is to get immersed into a storyline, go through the story, complete the storyline, enjoy the experience, and then move on to the next one.
Mm.
With an MMO, you never get to the end.
Mm.
You just got to keep ploughing in and ploughing in, and what do you actually get out of it?
Yeah, and with big sandbox games, like, say, you know, the GTAs or the Elder Scrolls games like Skyrim, Oblivion, Morrowind, you know, all of that, you're going to be the significant person in that universe.
Yes.
Thousands of people can't be the significant person in that universe.
No.
Age of Conan is free to play.
As I've discussed before, though, because obviously there's a difference between just straightforward MMO and MMORPG, and what we're describing here is more MMORPG. Mm. So, you know, I like Team Fortress 2 with the MMO because, you know, you can drop in, you can drop out, you can kind of leave the game for like several months and you don't lose anything.
Yeah.
You know.
Which is cool.
Exactly. But MMORPGs, it is almost like a full-time job in a way. You know, you do lose out if you don't play it.
And yeah, I can't hold down something like that. I have too many commitments on my time.
I decided to get all nostalgic for a moment and remember the fact that there was a Matrix Online MMO RPG. Yeah, there was.
That was going to be massive, wasn't it?
Yeah, it launched in the US and Europe in 2005, and it was shut down on July 31st, 2009.
I'm surprised it lasted that long, to be honest.
Mm. What did they say about closing? Sony Online Entertainment unexpectedly decided to discontinue service to the Matrix Online due to low subscription numbers in June 2009. Sony Online Entertainment shut down the service at midnight August 1st, 2009. The game had under 500 active players before the shutdown. The days leading up to the closing, as well as the end of the service themselves, were chronicled in the gaming website Giant Bomb in a video series titled Not Like This, a reference to a line in the Matrix first movie.
There's Star Wars Galaxies as well.
Yep.
That closed down, didn't it?
I'm trying to think of...
It's kind of the fate of all online games, though.
Apart from World of Warcraft, for some reason.
It's to pretty much close down once its members are too low.
You need to do something very specific.
Mm.
Like, I think that's why Eve has continued, which I've never played.
Absolutely.
But
I mean,
I can see it's a completely different thing.
If I didn't have a regular full-time office job, I'd probably keep my subscription to Eve, but I'd reopen it and kind of and go for it again. But I'd have to not have a full-time job.
In kind of related to that, with Eve... The entire idea of that as an MMO is, I'm not sure, but I think it's X, the new X game, which is single player. I think I might lose myself to that after watching trailers for it.
Okay.
But that's as a single player thing. I like the idea of that as, you know, your universe, your sandbox.
Yeah.
Possibly with having one or two people you know in the game, but yeah,
that would make a difference.
Yeah, as a whole,
if you're kind of comparing them to regular kind of games that have like a multiplayer element, it's like if you have a look, see how many people are still playing those games and whether the servers are actually still open.
Mm.
And you know, obviously, the older it is, the less likely that is. You know, that it's going to be able to play that game. Now imagine if you just took away the single player element and you just had that multiplayer which ran on servers and whatnot, which, you know, will close down if that was too low, you know, numbers. So it's like, well, you're kind of buying a temporary game in essence.
Well, yeah. Maybe the future, because obviously there's a lot of work being put into MMOs to produce them, and then like this sort of like those that keep going subscription, or somebody will try to make this subscription on launch, and then they have to pedal back and make it free to play or whatever, blah, and then eventually the servers get closed down. Perhaps they need to do more about making the software kind of open, to the extent that if you're somebody who's willing to buy a license for the game for the for a server that you own, and then you sub license that out,
kind of like some of the fans did for Phantasy Star Online.
Yeah, if there could be that kind of, because then it's like, well, the company doesn't have to maintain stuff, but at least they would be getting money, one assumes, from the server licensees. And obviously then, like with even stuff like enterprise software, if the licensee hasn't paid for their license, then you just go and shut them down.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all in favor of people keeping things running by themselves if the company itself decides, you know, this isn't worth our...
But nobody seems to... But the companies at the moment, I mean, like those couple of games we've just talked about, you know, like Matrix Online and that, nobody seems to have been giving people the means to do something like that.
No,
and that was always the pain in the ass. That was kind of why I liked the original Xbox's way of doing multiplayer, which was it would be peer-to-peer.
Yes.
Which meant that while the original Xbox, you know, could get on Xbox Live, if you logged on with the game, it didn't require servers. You could find the game if someone else in the world was playing that game on their Xbox, then you would be able to, you know, hook up and play a game, which I did on one of the Jedi Knight games, which was out on the Xbox.
Oh, yeah.
I did that, and that was years later. And I just found a lobby with about 6 people who were playing it. And they seemed to be having the time of their life. I got completely... I got my ass handed to me several times. But it was nice to see that they were still playing it. And it still worked.
Yeah.
But, of course, you know, with everything being server-based, that's always the downside.
And with so many different MMOs actually going free-to-play, I think people may actually be asking the question, why can't I just wait till it gets to that point and then I'll join for free?
Well, that's
yes.
It's similar to the mentality that happens to the fact that we've got a lot of retail stores at the moment. They keep having sales on constantly, and people will just be like, oh, I'll just wait till something's on sale.
Yeah, I can wait.
And that obviously doesn't help the distributors or the retailers or anything. And you've got a similar thing obviously going on with games at the moment, regardless. Even though I would say that perhaps opening prices for some things new, even if we're not talking about subscription stuff, like say a new copy of a game could be quite expensive and perhaps a little too expensive. But anyway, other subscription things. I mean, obviously, was it Elder Scrolls Online is meant to be coming to PS4 and Xbox One. So that means that you'd have to have your subscription to PSN Plus or obviously Xbox Live Gold, and one assumes then a subscription as well to Elder Scrolls Online in order to play.
Perhaps what they should actually do is actually make a deal with PlayStation Xbox Gold to actually create a third tier for membership, so that you have like Platinum. You know, Xbox Live Platinum, where you have access to, you know, kind of this, you know, the extra subscription-y stuff.
That'd be cool.
Rather than kind of having two separate, you know, costs.
I think one of the things, and this is probably one of the issues that people have with subscription games, like, reading those comments, and it's like, oh, who's got the time, blah, to...
Yeah.
And it's like, this is the problem with, like, most MMOs, the way they're designed a lot of the time. Not necessarily in the case of, say, Team Fortress 2, but anything that's got role-playing going on, the world moves on whilst the player isn't there.
Yeah.
Usually to their detriment for not having been there.
Yep. Yeah.
Animal Crossing.
Animal Crossing's not that bad now. I wouldn't say that about Wild World. But,
Nintendo Dogs?
They don't run away.
They don't run away, but they get in a state.
Yeah, they get in a state. But no, it's just...
they get what?
In a state.
As oh, in, I thought you said get staked.
Well, so the episode from the vampire
spun by a dogs. But Bloody they... Buffy, the RSPCA slayer.
I mean, I would love to play Elder Scrolls online like I would like to play Eve, but due to the amount of time they want to put in, it's like, there's other things I want to do with my life. I'm what? Not going to be subscribing to it anyway, even though for Elder Scrolls, on, you know, the amount I've played Skyrim and Oblivion, I'm ideal market. At the same time, the reason I like playing those is because I don't have to play them every day.
Also, I've seen video before I got took down of Elder Scrolls Online. It didn't look like Oblivion or
Skyrim. You know,
Skyrim. It looked a hell of a lot like an MMO.
So unless it doesn't look like Ragnarok 2.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, there we go.
But oh, and just incidentally, I think I remember seeing something that the, you know, if there are any free-to-play games on PS4, I think they've said that a PlayStation Plus membership won't be required.
Oh, that's something.
Yep. So when Elder Scrolls Online does become free-to-play, which it probably will do before it hits either of the next-gen consoles, if we're being realistic, then it probably won't require PlayStation.
Which is cool.
Unless you're insane, you will be subscribing to PlayStation Plus anyway, because it gives you stuff all the time.
I mean,
it's got your instant games collection, isn't it?
Yeah. Which is pretty cool. I mean, don't get us wrong. We don't mind paying for, you know, games. We just don't want to keep on paying for them.
I pay too bloody much for games because I buy too many bloody games. my Steam list, as an example. I'm not going to have a gravestone. I'm just going to have the unplayed list from Steam.
That's going to be an expensive gravestone.
It's going to be very tall.
Probably need some kind
of... It may affect property prices around the cemetery.
Oh, dear. But I'm just trying... It's awkward, the whole idea of, oh, should they go free-to-play or not? And obviously, if it depends on the nature of the content they're planning to provide, because if they're saying that it's going to have a good single-player experience, that means that one assumes they'd be kind of putting a lot of effort into having a decent bit of story there, because one assumes you don't want to go dungeoneering for the sake of dungeoneering all by yourself.
But even then, if they're going to be concentrating on the single player, I don't get what the point is with having it online. What is the point if it's going to be mostly single player and you can go through dungeons by yourself and whatnot? What is necessarily the point of having other people in the real world like there as well?
So they can wind you up by killing you and nicking all your bloody stuff and nicking your horse.
Yeah. I'll kill you with a rat flail.
Do you know what would make? Do you know what would make more sense?
Is if you're level 1. I'm level 15. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, lol. Owned.
What would make far more sense if somebody set up MMORPGs where you would get a set group of players who are able to have their own story in a set portion of the game, like you'd have a generated either island or continent. So randomly generated, if you were somebody starting the new game, and if you had a friends list or whatever, and you invited people to become characters on your continent, and then you would move towards, you know...
I agree.
It's almost like connecting the islands type thing.
Yeah, and then you can connect them up if you want.
You know what that's reminding me of?
As well, he writes the story as they go.
Yeah, but you were saying, Retroid?
You know what that reminds me of? Home. PlayStation Home.
Yep.
My entire issue with it was I loved the entire here's a virtual world, here's an apartment that you can have. You can have arcade machines from the Namco collection, which if you downloaded the beta from the Japanese PlayStation store, you had a PlayStation Network collection of, you know, classic arcade games. But the actual arcade cabinets were items that you could place in your apartment in PlayStation Home. Now, that to me is absolutely fantastic, because you could have all the, you know, little trophies around, you could have it all decorated.
Yeah.
In the, you know, the way you wanted. I wanted PlayStation Home to be populated by people only on your friends list. Where if there were people milling around, they were people who were using Home at the time, who were on your friends list.
Yep.
I just want, that's all I wanted, and I just wanted to be able to, you know, mill around and go, oh, how are you? Right, I'll use voice chat, I'll walk along here. Do you fancy playing this game? Yes. Okay, awesome. Let's go to the, you know, the lobby in PlayStation Home, or let's go back to the, you know, to my apartment for, you know, not for sexy time, but for gamey time. You know, for that kind of thing. I wanted a sort of a personalized MMO environment. And to me, what actually happened with Home is the perfect illustration of why I don't like MMOs. You log on to PlayStation Home, you've got your own area, which is yours. As soon as you step into the big wide world, you've just got a shower of arseholes shambling around. And you don't know any of them. And just, why the hell are these people in my personal gaming space, which is what's happening, because I am in front of my gaming machine. Why are these strangers in here? And the various ways that people found to troll everyone else. Like when they turned off voice chat in public areas because people were turning on their hi-fis really loud, leaving a headset next to it, and then going out. So, you know, all that kind of thing. That, you know, to anyone who's wanted PlayStation Home, my sister-in-law, her boyfriend before she moved up, he was up in Scotland, she's down here in Carlisle, and they wanted PlayStation Home on their, you know, PS3s so they could, you know, walk around and chat to each other, even though, you know, if they couldn't, you know, yeah, actually, you know, be in each other's presence, at least they could talk online. No. That got patched out because people trolled each other. That's why I don't like MMOs. Or, you know, that's why I keep liking the idea of MMOs. I don't like the idea of all these games that are based on things that I like, but it's just the actual reality. It's so far away from what I actually want from a game.
So going back then partially to the idea of having customizable islands or continents that a specific group of players can inhabit as an alternative to the usual MMO model, which is here's a server, here's a whole bunch of copied dungeons on said server, here's hundreds or thousands of other players on said server, good luck. Having a far more control, I mean, just because we're talking about people coming together to play a game online doesn't mean that it has to be hundreds or thousands of instances of players on the same part of game at the same time. I think the fact that people, this is probably where stuff has been failing, is the fact that it is so too open, far less customized than it could possibly be, far less personal. And this is perhaps why a lot of MMOs have been suffering. I mean, if you're playing a game of Team Fortress, you know, with Team Fortress 2, so there's usually a set number of players on the server, or on the bit of space that you're playing in at the time and doing your thing. Okay, there's no story involved. But the problem with the games that try to have story and quests at the same time, like your WoWs, like your friggin' Ragnarok 2 Online and stuff like that, is the fact that it's this really impersonal space that you don't actually make any form of mark on. Now, if you actually had a space where you could make a mark on it, and you're obviously... And I would agree with this kind of thing, because it would be so different to be able to pay... You would get that. And it, actually, in some ways, that's perhaps why Eve still works, because you do have a personal bit of paid, customizable space, which is your ship. You keep upgrading your ship. And you can also do things to your character and stuff to kind of change their appearance and stuff and learn new skills and everything. And obviously, a lot of MMOs, which are role-playing, you can upgrade skills and that. But you do have just that tiny bit of personal space. And perhaps that's what general sort of MMORPGs do need, is that you have a degree of personal space or a customizable landscape which you can go and adventure, almost like a D&D campaign or a Pathfinder campaign or whatever, on a piece of land, properly do a whole, we're a bunch of heroes trying to go through this main quest, woohoo, you know, and maybe have obviously easy transfers in case your group gets too small and you make friends with somebody else and you want to go and work on their island or continent or whatever. I think it's the fact that we've been concentrating on having thousands or hundreds of people in the same virtual space at the same time.
Can I also say that MMORPGs is another instance of symmetric gameplay, where everybody has the same kind of instances, the same kind of capabilities and whatnot. And it's like, what would happen if you could actually have, say, for example, somebody that is not a character, but is basically an engineer of a specific area. So they can spawn enemies, they can, you know, basically change the world in a specific area.
That sounds a little bit like Fable Legends.
Well, I reckon that kind of thing would be quite a whole new thing.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that if you wanted to make something like Elder Scrolls Online or interesting, you would just not go the route that all the MMOs have been, which is a huge land with lots of dungeons, little story that feels like it personally affects you or that you have any real part in it, because there's loads of other people around you. You can see all these other player characters around you. What really does my role play? I have no role.
I mean, it's almost like there's, you know, this like field somewhere, and there's a big pit full of failed MMORPGs that, you know, thought that they could, you know, cross the pit, and they just fell. And yeah, now some, you know, somebody quite experienced has come along and being like, oh no, I can get over that.
And
the chasm still looms in front of them.
Yeah.
They don't have the pouch of sand necessary to see the way.
Warning, other team.
From Zelda.
Oh, I was thinking more Indiana Jones, but, you know. But, yeah, it was just kind of... I would pay for stuff, but it has to actually do something different. If Elder Scrolls Online does end up being just well reskinned, there's like, well, yeah, you may have the lore of the Elder Scrolls games there, but if I'm just having to randomly go off to a dungeon every so often, it's going to be a bit boring. It'd be interesting, obviously, though, if players could have, like, player houses in towns or something, but you'd have to have limited numbers of players on specific servers or server spaces. Like, you'd have to make it, well, essentially what I was talking about, the customizable land, because as soon as you've got lots of players, you can't have those customizable personal spaces.
Just thinking there, having player houses, you'd have, you know, there, you know, here is the residence of Daryl the Dwarf. Here is the residence of Barry the Blacksmith. Here is the residence of Death Skull 6969 lol what, UTF 69 XX.
But it's quite interesting how they keep on doing this, and it's like gamers are renowned for being the bunch of, you know, basically people who are generally tend to be tech savvy and are far more willing to go out of their way to get stuff cheap or free than most other people. And it's like, you're kind of targeting that group of people that are so tech savvy, you know, that they're not going to turn around and say, oh, you know what, I was going to say no, but, you know, it's the only way that I can do it, so I'll fork out the money. No, they just won't do that. They will find a way around it.
I think part of the problem with MMOs is that a lot of these companies see the success of World of Warcraft and they think, oh, we want a part of that because it's just another game, isn't it?
Mm.
And a lot of people who have that, it's like, no, it's the online game that they play.
Can I just say that I agree with certain people when they kind of turn around and say, you know, there's this massive group of gamers that are, you know, kind of spending so much time on, you know, stuff like WoW. And it's like, if only we can actually get them to solve real world problems with their time.
Have you seen Stargate Universe, the pilot to that?
I have not.
Aha, well, you should probably watch the first part of it.
Ooh.
that's the origin of one of the main characters, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I thought it was quite a cool touch because, well, it's not a spoiler because it happens in the first few minutes, but there's, you know, the whole thing with the ancients in the Stargate universe.
Yeah.
Well, there's ancient text which the government can't solve. So part of what they do is they put out an MMO.
Mm.
And it has those logic and language puzzles as part of the, you know, the problems in the game.
Okay.
And it's just this bloke who lives with his ill mum.
Mm.
You know, this, like, you know, college dropout. And yeah. he solves it. And next thing he knows is there's, you know, there's Air Force personnel turning up and saying, you know, we'd like to talk to you because, you know, that thing yeah. you solved, we've been trying to solve it for a few years now.
Well, that sounds like awesome. Sorry, almost sounds a bit like The Last Starfighter as well. Remember, my dad used to like that, you know, watching that film.
Mm.
It's yeah. like basically some kid that's got, like, top score in the entire, you know, kind of yeah, world yeah, at this one like arcade game. And so he kind of gets recruited by, you know, kind of this intergalactic force or federation or whatever to actually be a pilot in it.
I'm sorry, I've just had just taking this back just a moment to Elder Scrolls, just for a moment.
Fair enough.
I just want to make an observation about the idea of, so go back to that, having so many people on a server yeah. visibly there. Do you know another reason why it just doesn't work? These are games that are set in a pastoral setting. And even in their urban settings, you wouldn't have that many people.
No.
There's just too many people visible to individual players.
Yeah.
And yeah. to me, that's from an aesthetic and a gameplay point, it just yeah. doesn't work.
I quite liked the approach that Fable 2 and to an extent Fable 3 had to online. Did anyone play around with the online aspects of that?
Yeah, where you pulled a friend in.
Yeah. yeah, where you could be running, you could set it so that only people on your friends list could, you know, would be visible.
Yep.
And if you were running around in the game, everything would be all, you know, it would be all single player, but you'd just have a floating orb.
Yes.
Visible in the world, which is where the one of your friends was in the game world, and you could run up to them, and you could, you know, talk to them a little bit, and you could invite them into your world, or you could join theirs. At that particular point in you know, their gameplay story, and I quite liked that. That was, you know, probably the closest to sort of, you know, online RPG that, you know, I've got where I've thought, yeah, that kind of works. Mm. And I wish more games would do something like that.
Mm.
That does. It would just be people you knew.
Yeah.
Or friends of friends. I'd accept that.
But are we basically saying that games that want subscriber money, they kind of need to be doing something genuinely different
yes.
to justify it?
They would have to be something staggeringly bloody amazing.
Mm.
I mean, even if it's just basically almost like episodic content with story, you know, that would work if, like, every month there was, like, a new, I don't know, even 15, 20 minute worth of story content.
It blows my mind that the World of Warcraft expansions, people had to buy those, didn't they?
Yeah. Mm.
Yes.
That blows my mind. What the hell are you doing? You're paying monthly for the game. And then they're selling you something extra. Yeah.
They sold them Kung Fu Panda the other month, didn't they?
Yes. Wasn't
Mr. Pandaria?
Wasn't there something about the fact
Kung
that...
Fu Panda.
Well, wasn't there something about the fact that now there are like three times as many of these kind of Pandorians or Pandarians or whatever they are
yeah.
as actual pandas in the world?
Oh, that's just typical.
That's just depressing.
Crazy,
oh.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of idiots, has anyone seen the advert for Diablo 3?
No.
Look it up.
Okay.
It's the... Oh, good, we appear to be round the turn of the millennium kind of outlook on gamers. I fucking hate advertising.
Well, maybe I'll try and find a link for that so that I can put it in the episode notes for our dear listeners.
It's out at the point in the future three. Where I don't care because it's Diablo.
I quite like the look of that.
Yeah. It's not my kind of thing.
Okay, well, I'm afraid that is all we've got time for this week because, you know, it's time. It's time to say goodnight. It's time to say goodbye. But we're not going to start singing kind of like the whole kind of Sound of Music kind of end of night song because I'd probably have to kill myself on air for that to take place.
Just think of the amount of listeners.
She said probably.
Okay, so it's goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood, Super Retroid on Twitter and retroid@eurogamer.net.
And it's goodnight from me, Paul, and aka one-armed underscore cookie on Twitter, and you can find me lurking around the game jar or Hex Dimension.
It's good night from me. I have a website, paul-bluett.com, although at the moment it's having some technical difficulties. And I'm on Twitter as Paul Bluett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You could also maybe trundle by drowninginmultimedia.co.uk, where I'm meant to be trying to put together the results of a wages survey for comics creators at some point this next month. So that could be interesting. I also want to give a shout out to Ono Video Games. They had me on again. We did a bit of a spoiler cast for, well, quite the spoiler cast for Papers, Please, the dystopian Soviet indie hit of the summer. I want to say hit. It was pretty good. But anyway, you can go and listen to that at over at onovideogames.com. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes as Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're probably on Pinterest. Please check out Hex Dimension, our sister site, if you want to write groovy stuff about, I don't know, Bruce Campbell or the Hulk.
Anything that you think people want to read.
Or something you're passionate about.
Yes, that is the best writing.
Yeah. Come talk to us. We're open to suggestions and pictures from new writers. Okay?
It's pictures, not pictures.
I said pictures.
Okay.
Anyway. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.